As we look closely at this accident, there were a number of very, very poor decisions. And we as pilots look at this scenario and these decisions jump at us dramatically. How do we recognize these same flaws in our flying? You know, we're all very poor judges of our own flying, and it's hard to be objective about ourselves. So how do we become objective about ourselves and see ourselves? Why didn't this guy just see how bad some of these decisions were?
It's a casual attitude, right from the beginning, delaying the departure, not having approach plates for an area that adjoins his destination area. Some of these things just seem to me to be very casual in terms of how he viewed planning the flight.
Exactly. And you also have to wonder about the back of the mind pressures that are going on here also. Looking for a ride home, not wanting to get stranded too far from home. It's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night now, and somebody's going to have to drive 2 hours up to another airport to go pick him up. All those things can affect decision-making in a very negative way.
Well, that's the get-home-itis syndrome.
Absolutely.
And it sounds as if this pilot intended to leave Florida in the morning, but instead he didn't leave until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Already there should be something telling him this isn't going very good. Then I don't see anything in the accident report wherein he received a weather briefing at his stop. And perhaps if he'd had a good briefing there, he might have realized how bad the conditions were up in the New York area and had made a different decision there.
Or continuing to monitor it as you're flying. You got 2 hours of flying from that last stop. Call Flight Watch. There was a PIREP out for severe turbulence by a twin, and you're flying a much smaller airplane. So what do you think it's going to do for you?
Yeah.
And maybe that was the time to turn around.
When I see any accident or similar events like this where unexplained mistakes, you know, just one after another, I always look towards fatigue because I think fatigue is very insidious. It's a double-edged sword. It affects not only our mental capacity and our decision-making ability, but it also affects our physical ability to fly the airplane. And clearly in this accident scenario, we see both. Very bad judgment and decision making, and a loss of the physical skills of flying the airplane. On a given day, this guy probably could fly an ILS approach. He wouldn't have put himself in this situation. But once again, at 10:15 at night, wow, that's a heck of a time to challenge yourself.
It's important, I think, to establish a set of guidelines for yourself and say, when I exceed these guidelines, I'm going to execute a missed approach. And the guidelines we all know are full-scale deflection, a number of those. We could list 7 or 8 of them, but I'm not sure this pilot did that. It sounds like he got down well below minimums. And if he had adhered to one or more of those guidelines and started the climb, that would have kept him out of a lot of trouble, I think.
And that goes back to the personal minimums. And you have to look at the whole set of conditions with the low ceiling, with the wind. At the end of the day, you've exceeded several of your personal minimums. Maybe you never even should have attempted the approach, never even left cruising altitude, just continued on and gone up to Connecticut at that point or wherever you're going to go.
Well,
Don't even start the descent.
That may have been affected by the fact that he didn't have approach plates for that
exactly,
area with him.
Exactly.
So,
you know, so all the personal minimum boundaries start to be exceeded. One of the things, though, that did work out, or at least did right, was confess his plight to ATC and start trying to seek some help from them. Even though he never actually declared an emergency, at least he used that as a resource to get the approach plates, get some weather. What you do with that information is up to you, but at least start to use that as a resource.
My guess is he had severe control problems with the airplane because initially on the miss he didn't respond
right to
the controller. I don't think this airplane was flying all that well.
Or spatial disorientation. Because eventually the airplane did climb enough to get to the ILS over at Bridgeport, so it sounded like it was just really disoriented with that turn to the north.
Talk about a distraction. He reports having the stall warning horn going off. How would you like to try
continuously
to handle this flight with a continuous stall warning horn blaring in your ears?
And it becomes a capacity issue. How much can one person tolerate? And boy, if you start thinking about the straws that are on this camel's back, I mean, you know, starting with it's late at night, you're in crummy weather, and it's all building up, and then you got a stall horn, and you want to silence it. You know, you're looking for a button to press, which is our response to any horn we hear going off, and you can't. One other point that I think we see over and over and over again, and that is the general tendency by pilots to not go missed approach or not do a go-around. Things are going badly, things are going poorly. The missed approach resets the entire stage for us. And I think far too often, you know, we don't do that. But I think, once again, it's a mindset issue. And another thing I believe is that we don't practice missed approaches, so that when we need to do them, we're not very good at them. It calls for positive action, you know, increasing the power, getting separation from the ground. And if you haven't practiced them, if you haven't done one in the last 6 months, you're probably going to botch it.
I think there's an element of denial here as well. The pilot didn't acknowledge the quality of the approach. It was very poor. And even after, on the missed approach, didn't acknowledge his situation until being pressed by ATC.
The severity of the situation.
The severity of the situation, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
This was critical. Yeah, critical, right. Critical to make some good decisions at that point to salvage this.
We're analyzing this, you know, with the benefit of knowing all the weather and knowing the end of this story. You know, here this fellow is, he's trying to get home. He makes one bad approach, but he thinks he can make a little better approach. Let's still stick with Long Island, you know. And from our perspective, sure, let's go to fly the VFR airport. But that's a hard decision to make when you're the pilot in command and you're busy and you're overloaded.
Good point, which I think brings us back to the very first decision point that I brought up, and that is prior planning. You know, if you have a good plan, executing that plan becomes a lot easier, as opposed to ad-libbing. Ad-libbing and aviation don't go hand in hand. Every time I find myself trying to make up a plan as I go along, you're right. Once again, we come into capacity issues, and this guy was clearly maxed out. All of us can relate to the feeling at some point in our aviation career where we've been maxed out. I mean, at this point, this guy was along for the ride. And once again, I think he was in denial. This is really going bad. How do I fix this? Well, the good news is it shows you how inherently forgiving the system is. I mean, how many mistakes did this guy make before he finally ended up losing his life? You know, he could have been in an accident 5 or 6 times prior to this, but ATC was working with him. They're helping him. What can we do to help you? You know, here's information. So there's a lot out there, but using it wisely is really the key.
Right, and that's using all the resources. And the accident report doesn't mention it, but I'd assume that this airplane would have at least an autopilot, coupled autopilot perhaps. It's another tool that you could use. The weather conditions may have been such that night with the wind and the turbulence that you start exceeding autopilot limits, may have tripped off the autopilot or run out of trim. And hello, that's a huge wake-up call. If the autopilot can't keep up with this approach, how do you think that you could hand fly it?
Another thought is this great subject of personal minimums, okay? Everybody, you know, draws a box around themselves and decides what framework they can operate safely in. And flying at night, IFR, how many people does that work for?
I'm glad we reviewed this accident, Bob, because it reinforces my personal decision to not fly single pilot IFR at night. That's more work than I want to take on.
And truly, you know, when we look at in general aviation, how many times do we absolutely, positively have to be there? And part of the accident report, the wife said, the next day was clear. Boy, use time as a tool. And also have your personal minimums ahead of time. It's dark. I'm staying in Virginia. I'm staying in Florida. This is not working anymore for me.
But you still have to recognize that these factors are building on you. That's, you know, one of the things here. Again, the factors just keep adding up and adding up, and eventually you've got to say this plan isn't working.
And how do you know that point? That's the hard part, when you're in the heat of the battle.
Well, this got even a little bit worse when he did go to Bridgeport, because he didn't have the approach plate. So he's going to need some help from ATC.
Exactly.
To get the frequency and the
Course and altitudes and everything.
So that just added a lot more work to it. But getting back to what you said, Wally, I do most of my night IFR flying with two pilots. And we're busy to do it properly and set everything up. You're doing some work. So when you come from that environment and say, would I like to fly this approach myself at night? The answer is no. I agree with you.
Especially given the conditions in this accident.
Given those conditions, this is not a cakewalk, considering what this pilot was up against with severe turbulence and a damaged airplane on the second approach.
Yep.
Doesn't work very well.
Let me just put in a little plug for air traffic here and how well the system is out there to support us. It ties in with the prior planning. The Bridgeport Tower closes at 10 o'clock at night. This accident occurred well after 10 o'clock at night. Well, what was the tower controller doing there? Once he heard about this guy's problem, he stayed on to be there for this guy when he got to Bridgeport. Yeah. Had this pilot done his homework, he would have known that Bridgeport closed at 10 o'clock. So that's not one of my options, you know. But once again, ATC, you declare an emergency, they're there for you. And my hat is off to them because everybody was trying to help this guy, and he really needed to help himself in this scenario.